The World Tomorrow. Garner Ted Armstrong brings you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greeting friends around the world. You can go just about out of your mind trying to decipher the meaning of today's world news. The Middle East is being absolutely saturated with arms, the United States continually decrying the spread or proliferation of nuclear weapons is nevertheless now going to make a nuclear energy pact with Iran, and of course, prior to his ouster following the Watergate affair, Mr. Nixon went throughout the Middle Eastern area, principally in the countries of Egypt and Syria, as well as Lebanon, and while he was in Egypt, he promised nuclear reactors to that country. Years and years ago, I said eventually there will be more than 40 countries joining what is called the nuclear club, with nuclear reactors with byproduct of plutonium, which, as you know, is a very essential ingredient for atomic bombs. Privately, our State Department may think that the Israeli government already has the atom bomb, and they may also believe that Egypt is ready to provide itself with a similar weapon. So on the one hand, while we talk about SALT talks, we talk about the Geneva Conference, we hail Mr. Ford's trip to Vladivostok and the arrangement with Soviet Party Chief Brezhnev, which leads toward a limitation of sorts. At least it allows the Russians to catch up in MERS while we catch up in super booster rockets. At the same time, we see the world like a tottering, unbelievably intermixed morass of inextricable problems of racism, of tribalism, of religion and politics all at each other's throats. Wars that persist in the Southeast Asian area, such as Cambodia and the one in Vietnam, constant problems in Korea. And at the same time, we edge closer by the month and by every single year toward that time when even the developing third world, country after country, will possess nuclear weapons. And as if we can't wait for that time that our children and grandchildren will inherit that beautiful, wonderful world tomorrow with more than 40 nations of instable government, of racist bigotry, of hatred unbridled and unparalleled for each other, of people like the PLO who claim to be the only legal representative of the Palestinians for a West Bank nation proposed to be settled there if the Israelis are willing to give it up, which they are not, all the way down to countries of revolutionary bent which are trying to take over, communists and the like, all the way from Yemen or Aden and the periphery of the Arab states to Africa, to Central and South America, and all over Southeastern Asia. But as if we cannot wait for that world when all of these third world nations will have nuclear weapons, the United States of America is seeing to it that they can fill in the gap with conventional weapons, if that's what you want to call, rockets, mortars, supersonic, sophisticated F-14 Tomcat fighters, POW anti-tank weapons, hovercraft, helicopters capable of operating in zero-zero visibility. We are absolutely pouring arms into the Middle East because we want to contribute to stability in that part of Europe, or that part of the Middle East, rather. And right now, Europe, of course, is in the act because hundreds of freight trucks are going grinding away through Europe. As a matter of fact, recently one communique, which my eye just fell on, which is why I said Europe, from Frankfurt was that customers in Middle East oil-producing countries have bought so many industrial goods in Western Europe in recent months that the railroads simply cannot transport them. West German railroads were no longer accepting goods for the Middle East because they couldn't guarantee they would reach their destination. The spokesman said that 151 railway freight wagons loaded with more than 4,500 tons of machinery for Iran and Syria were stuck at the east-west German border because Poland refused to admit more than 15 wagons a day for transit through its territory. That flood of goods from Europe is helping to cause this fantastic boom that is now underway in the Middle East, where these nations, oil-rich OPEC members, are finding it impossible to spend all the money they earn and to spend it fast enough. They're trying to leap on up into the modern 20th century, the avowed aim of the Shah of Iran to make Iran the fifth largest power on the face of the earth before the turn of the century, and they're trying to do it just about overnight. As a result, the Middle East is virtually awash in imported weapons from the United States, the Soviet Union, France, and Britain, all of whom are pumping arms and military know-how into the Middle East at an unprecedented rate. Many programs I've done on this have elicited a great deal of comment. And, of course, in the current number, The Plain Truth, we tackle some of these problems. Every single issue coming out now bi-monthly, twice a month, including the current articles, such as the war that won't go away in Vietnam, Cambodia. Newsmaker profile is Ali Bhutto of Pakistan. There's an article on how the new era dawns for the Suez Canal, and world shippers await the reopening of that. And then there's an interesting article, too, about the common market finds tougher going with producer countries. And from our bureau reports from Bonn, Vancouver, Sydney, Brussels, world capitals, we tell you about how China really went for Franz Josef Strauss. The West German Chancellor Helmut Schmidt was very upset when Strauss took it upon himself to go down to China recently and was hailed virtually as a hero, almost as if he were the West German leader. I've met Mr. Strauss personally several times. He's quite an engaging and quite a, I would say, imposing figure, very full of energy, and is hailed by some as very likely to be a West German chancellor in the near future. And I would say that if there's any turn to the right in West Germany, that's very likely true. Well, you can read about that in the current number of The Plain Truth. There's also this article about freezing the dead. You know, that's a new thing. We're doing a television program on it very soon, perhaps. Freeze now, live later, or better yet, freeze, wait, reanimate. That's the slogan of the Life Extension Society, whose members are actively involved in trying to cheat man's ultimate enemy, the grave. There are many, many people that are being quick frozen and being put in, I forget the word for it, I think it was called dormitories. Yeah, dormitories. And awaiting thawing out someday when they think finally, after geneticists and scientists have solved the problems of aging and the source of life and how to keep on living physically, that these people can be brought back to life somehow. There's an article on that in the current Plain Truth, one on illiteracy and teaching the world to read. And there's part three of The Incredible Human Potential, a new book by my father, Herbert W. Armstrong, The Missing Dimension in Knowledge. That's coming along in The Plain Truth. Column by John Hill, Why Not Pretend You Are God? You'll be interested in that. If you were to pretend you were God today, what kind of a religion, what kind of a world would you build? Article on the politics of desperation. In the face of all the skyrocketing fuel, fertilizer, and food costs, crop failures, and bad weather, it shows how the third world is turning to arms, turning practically anywhere to solve its problems. And also the food versus fodder, grim choices that lie ahead. You've heard of some of the sensational statements of Secretary of Agriculture Earl Butz recently, and perhaps seen some of the commentary that he got back as a result of an article syndicated, which appeared in large newspapers across the country, concerning the idea that we as humans do not eat the same kind of fodder that cattle do, that we wouldn't eat the grains that cattle do, and that Americans were not about to change their meat-eating habits. You'll see articles along that line in the current Plain Truth, these and many more. The end of cornucopia for U.S. agriculture is taken up in this issue. The Speaks Out column that I write every single number, this time deals with the politics of politics. Now, it was during the Johnson administration, a leading weekly news magazine editorializing on Mr. Johnson's chances in the upcoming election viewed the president's chances from the perspective of the violent anti-war demonstrations, the civil rights movement, the arms race, pollution, and most especially, the Vietnam War. And as that November drew ominously nearer, the magazine blandly prophesied that the Vietnam War would almost certainly be brought to some sort of conclusion. The reason? Well, they said that Mr. Johnson would most certainly not dare face the voters in the upcoming election with a war on his hands. I remember responding rather violently to that on a program at the time. That's quite an indictment, isn't it? I just can't believe that that could be true. Yet it was somehow lost in the normal, repetitious analyses by the media that always surround some impending presidential election. I don't think the people who wrote that statement in the magazine knew what they said, but in effect they were saying that presidents can start wars, that they can protract wars, that they can halt wars through various means that are commonly at their disposal if the stakes are high enough. In other words, an election. That if the president, quote, has a war on his hands, there's an election coming, well, I better get rid of the war. That's exactly what they were saying in his magazine. The kind of politics that puts occupying an office, winning an election, ahead of some of the incredible agonies of the human race is inconceivable to me. If you want to find out why, to me, politics think, and will always think, then write for a free subscription to The Plain Truth with these articles I've just described and many more. We're coming out twice as often, twice the impact, with a tabloid Plain Truth. That's for the week ending March 8th of 1975. And it features Mr. Kissinger's gloomy vision, the war that won't go away, and food and population. Well, arms are flowing into the Middle East at an unbelievable rate. And the United States Army is now selling more weapons abroad than it purchases during the course of the year. For the first time, it was announced recently that the United States Army will sell more of its own weapons to foreign countries than it will purchase itself. That was announced by the Defense Department's Chief Purchasing Officer. He told a meeting of defense contractors that foreign military sales for all three military services will be somewhere between $7 to $8 billion. Now, those go not only to Arab countries, but also to Israel. The U.S. Army is considering making first deliveries of about 110 Lance missiles for Israel out of its own stocks. That was reported in Aviation Week recently. But the Mideast is becoming virtually awash in imported weapons. Specialists estimate that Mideast governments, especially Iran, in a big hurry to build a gigantic arsenal there, with the Shah of Iran in a hurry to resurrect ancient Persia, I guess, is going to become one of the most powerful military forces, and actually already is. A recent article in National Geographic was a very fine one about Iran, which also showed that Iran leads the world in hovercraft. As I was saying in the last program, that they are able to hover just a few feet over the surface of the ocean or the land alike and simply ride on a cushion of air. And those are troop carriers, very, very sophisticated weaponry and machinery of modern arms making. Saudi Arabia, arms pouring into Saudi Arabia at an unprecedented rate. And of course, you've heard about some of the civilian organizations being given gigantic multi-million government contracts to train ex-Vietnam veterans. You know, some of that is a little bit hypocritical to me. You know why? We've got so many people who decried war. But if you're willing to pay them, they're willing to train others to go to war any old time. Now, we had so many people in Vietnam who would refuse to fight, troops that would refuse to obey the command of an officer. Maybe you read the story of the one man who was captain on a B-52 who had flown, I forget how many hundreds, or maybe it was 150 or something, combat missions over Vietnam, dumping bombs on the hapless people below, and one day he simply flatly refused to go. Well, of course, he was retired or ousted, whatever, from the military service, and since has had to carve out a completely new and a different life for himself in an unrelated job. He has never flown an aircraft from that time. The United States nearly tore itself apart in the mid-60s over the Vietnam War. Yet it is so easy for a company like the Bunnell Corporation of Alhambra, California, to advertise in the papers, and immediately they've got all kinds of people wanting to go over there to teach those Arabs how to handle anti-tank weapons against U.S. tanks. So just, you know, it's a matter of how much money you're willing to pay. Like the story I told recently about, lady, we've already discovered, you know, what you are, now we're haggling about the price. It looks like we're willing to play the part of international prostitution. That is, that we are willing to arm, to equip, to train some of the very countries our Secretary of State says we may find ourselves locked in combat against in the near future. So Saudi Arabia, Libya, Egypt, Syria, Iraq, they may double their 1974 military expenditures to around $40 billion worth in 1975. Instructors, technicians, especially from the Soviet Union, and the United States are moving in with giant arms packages. We really resented it when we saw the Soviets were equipping and moving in to help, and technicians were training the North Korean army. Boy, that made us mad. You know, to see the communists supplying those North Vietnamese, man, that made us upset. Why, they were shipping truckloads of all kinds of weapons, and the more our troops would knock out, well, the Soviets would just replace them. I wonder how the Israelis feel about that, or maybe how you'd feel if you were in any country you want to mention, or how you feel as an American citizen. Now, we say the Soviet Union shouldn't do that. It's a dirty, rotten shame to see the Soviet Union arming all these countries, and where the arms go, technicians follow, specialists follow, and oftentimes those specialists try to influence the internal affairs of that country. Sometimes they've even been known to be agents of the government of that country, in military garb, who have maybe two or three jobs they're supposed to perform. But now, we don't do that, do we? Well, we lead the world in the sale of arms. We are selling more arms abroad than the Soviet Union ever got ready to begin to do. We're way ahead of them, towering ahead of them in the sale of arms abroad. Some current examples, though, are about 1,500 Soviet military personnel in the northeast African state of Somalia. And an article recently that I read just about claims Somalia has all but gone over to the Soviet Union, just about taken over because of the fantastic impact of the Soviet arms and Soviet technicians and military personnel that have been sent there. There are more than 1,000 Soviet specialists in Syria. In Iran, there are about 1,500 United States civilian and 660 U.S. military personnel. In Saudi Arabia, there are many, many American civilian personnel working in various oil-related jobs, oil industry-related jobs. And, of course, there are a certain small number of American military personnel. And they're going to send about 1,000 more U.S. veterans that are now civilians, but they will train the Saudi police, or the Saudi National Guard, it's going to be called, I believe. And still more U.S. personnel are expected shortly in Kuwait. Because, you see, we've been selling a lot of these little tiny countries some very sophisticated aircraft, like those A-4s, more than three or four squadrons were, 30 or better, as well as the Super Hawk anti-aircraft missiles with which to shoot down our F-4s if America ever finds itself in combat against some of those nations. And so we've got to send U.S. personnel to train them how to use it. Also, there were transport vehicles purchased recently. McDonnell Douglas wasn't really too terribly upset in this competition recently. You know, if one major firm loses out on a government contract to sell some fantastic supersonic fighter to our own Air Force, it can easily shop that thing abroad, and probably if they can get the price at least competitive with the Soviet Union, they could sell thousands of them, I assume. And it's so agonizing, because you see all these countries talking about food and talking about agriculture and the need to develop. You see Saudi Arabia, a vast desert land of wandering nomads down around Crucial Oman and around some places where there isn't even any such thing as a border except on a map. And you got just a few, really, anywhere near modernized cities, and precious few of those. And yet, with this incredible need for developing agriculture and for just development period, things such as schools and hospitals and medical facilities and educating that illiterate populace and lifting them out of a medieval, Middle Ages, superstition-ridden kind of a society. The old guns versus butter issue is still alive and well. Despotic leaders with deep suspicions against their own neighbors, even people of the same kind of a race, that's been one of the salvations almost of Israel, is the deep divisiveness, suspicion, and lack of ability to really cooperate among some of the Arab countries. And the first breakthrough in that was the cooperation of the Arabs in the oil embargo. Prior to that time, there were so many suspicions between the Syrians and the Egyptians, for example, that the former president's old attempt at a UAR, the United Arab Republic, soon went down the drain. Now we see new suspicions on the part of the Syrians and the Egyptians. Some of the other Arab countries think that Egypt may want to negotiate separately with Israel. And, of course, Israel is pushing precisely that, would like to get a separate negotiation so she can have her back door secure, as it were, with some kind of a guarantee of non-aggression and a large armed U.S. peacekeeping force between the two areas. So maybe it could then turn its attention to trying to work out something between Israel and Syria, or Israel and Jordan. But in the meantime, they're quite concerned about Egypt. So even today, if you're keeping track, and you certainly can if you've got your name on the mailing list of the Plain Truth to get this kind of information from behind the scenes and from on the spot, from our world capitals where we have regional editors abroad around the world, and we do subscribe to all the major wire services, as well as all the other foreign publications and some of the private journals that are not commonly available to the average citizen. So the Plain Truth is a potpourri of all of that kind of information in the light of Bible prophecy showing you what is going to happen in the future as well as what is happening today. So yes, there is suspicion and hostility in these countries. In Africa, the same thing is true. Tribalism, suspicion, and hostility leads one despotic leader after another to very quickly, upon gaining control of the country, spend just about all the money they can afford, not for the terrible problems of the citizens, not to fend off starvation, but to purchase arms. It's a disgusting thing to see it happening. Why the mad scramble? Who were they afraid of? You know, it's incredible. I don't understand the reasoning. Kuwait, right now, has earned enough money to be able to pay more money than the average American wage to every one of its men, women, and children for the next 15 years for doing exactly nothing. Want me to say that again? That's how much money that government has made. Now, they could begin to develop that country with that kind of money. They could put in schools and hospitals and roads and railways and airports and even Colonel Sanders. You know, they could put in a lot of the things of modern society that makes the area real nice. They could put in some of the hot dog stands. I better not pass up the Golden Arch, you know, McDonald's. But anyway, instead of doing this, it seems what they want is arms. And the United States is definitely willing to sell them all they want. So we're seeing an absolute flood of arms pouring into the Middle East, and this is the area that Bible prophecy specifically points out is going to be the tinderbox or the spark that will ignite World War III is to explode. The Bible talks about the Middle East as no other part of the earth. The Bible is a Middle Eastern book. It is written from the point of view historically, ethnically, chronologically, and prophetically. From Jerusalem as it looks out from that area of the world to the rest of the world. Jesus said that the one main event to which Christians should be looking, that they should be watching for, and he said, watch you therefore and pray always, would be the event surrounding Jerusalem. When you see Jerusalem surrounded with armies, then know the desolation thereof is nigh, he said, and that was to signal the beginning of what the Bible calls a great tribulation, followed by some gigantic interruptions even in the air above our heads, the heavenly signs spoken of in the 6th chapter of the book of Revelation and the 7th primarily, and followed by what the Bible calls the day of the Lord. Now here we are with arms pouring into an area which the Bible says eventually is going to be the scene of the greatest conflict, the greatest battle in all of human history. It's called Armageddon in the pages of the book of Revelation. It merely means Megiddo, and arms in a huge valley. It's the southern end of the Sharon Valley there. There's a little kind of a tell, a mound. It's at a juncture of the road that leads down from Damascus and over toward Haifa, or goes on down into central maritime plain of Israel and leads on down from there to Tel Aviv and thence to Jerusalem. And I have been there several times, and at that mound where the ancient city of Megiddo, the Bible says it's going to eventually be the scene of a gigantic battle that is going to number up into the literal millions of human beings who are going to perish in that area of the earth. It's one of the great ironies of our day, it seems to me, that the United States of America, a nation that says it is pursuing peace around the world, that tries to achieve peace between hostile antagonists and neighbors, tries, like Atlas, to shoulder the problems of all the world, tries to feed the world, clothe the world, educate the world, develop the world, tries to be the guarantor of peace and of territorial and national security and integrity of country after country around the world, protects many major countries, allowing them to divert all of their economic efforts toward the burgeoning industry, such as Japan, that can dwell under the shadow of the American nuclear umbrella in total security without any threat or fear of Soviet domination. Yet this same United States of America today, for all of our statements of how we want peace, is pouring arms into the Middle East in unprecedented numbers, and even going about the grisly business of training those people how to use them, if not against each other, maybe against us. And I know how they justify it. They justify it by saying, if we didn't sell them, the Soviet Union would, so why shouldn't we get the advantage? You know, it depends on who you trust. It depends on where you put your faith. If America would put its faith in God, if we literally did believe in a creator being who made all humankind and who made the laws, the great energies and forces that affect, that work upon, that uphold and sustain the entirety of the universe, our own solar system, this great broad earth on which we live, immutable, absolutely unchangeable, unalterable forces, energies, and laws that you cannot explain without a lawgiver. It would seem so ludicrous to most people, supposedly liberated, free thinkers, modernists all, who find now that it's far more chic to depend upon science, which now one Unitarian minister said recently at least has outmoded God, than it is to depend upon God. So if we are going to depend upon our Army, our Navy, and our Marine Corps, I would just like to comment that we're not going about it in the right way. We live in a world that is filled with tigers. And as one nation with an awful lot to lose and a great deal to protect and preserve, it behooves us to have the greatest, the strongest, the most modern, the most efficient, the most instantly mobile defense forces of any country on the face of this earth, to jealously guard the kinds of sophisticated weapons that we could provide our own forces and which would not be provided to others. Instead, our Navy lies ancient, outmoded by 20 years, way behind the Soviet fleet. Our Air Force is finding that it can't even get the fighters that it wants because we're selling them to foreign countries or giving them away to others. Our Marine Corps can't get those anti-tank weapons because we're sending them over to at least 14 separate nations and giving them away to about three others. Our Army is selling for the first time more weapons abroad out of its own stocks than it's going to buy from arms makers inside the United States. And most all of that is going into the Middle East. Can you believe what is happening in this world today? I tell you, as I said at the beginning of the program, you just about go nuts, you about go crazy, out of your tree, trying to figure out world news. Where are we headed? Where do we go? Well, let me tell you, that's what the plain truth is all about, isn't it? Striving to give people the overview, the big, broad, long overview of where do we go from here? Where do all of these local problems, the problems of drought, of crop damage, of the economic chaos, of unemployment, everything from food stamps to the problems of physical health and sickness. How does it all fit into Bible prophecy, and where is it taking us in the future? Every issue will have letters to the editor from around the world. It's sent to more than 100 nations. It's read by leaders of government, education, business, industry, in the private sector. The new tabloid, Plain Truth, will be coming out twice a month with about twice the number of articles as before. Specific articles getting technically and intricately into what the Bible says about today's unbelievable world news. Every single day as you look at the incredible march of world events, the economic blight spreading over Europe, the deep problem following the Yom Kippur War, the soaring Arab oil prices, runaway inflation, and deepening depression in parts of the world, or recession at least, and maybe headed toward depression, and we need to understand whether or not that is going to happen in the light of Bible prophecy. The Plain Truth deals with these things. Education, busing, crime, violence in society, the character drain in the United States, the toppling of government, what is happening to us as a people, and what the future holds. The Plain Truth, it dares to make the truth plain, and there isn't any subject you won't see covered in the pages of The Plain Truth.
It's all you need to do is to request it by sending your letter to Post Office Box 345, Sydney, New South Wales. Be sure to tell us the call letters of your station. We need that. That's all. There is no cost, but tell us the name of the radio station to which you've been listening, the call letters, and then send your letter to Box 345, Sydney, New South Wales. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have been listening to The World Tomorrow. If you would like more information, write to Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO Sydney, New South Wales. That's Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO Sydney, New South Wales.